and welcome to the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. I'm Jake, that's Sean. We're back for another week of good action. No sports today, no basketball, but Sean, how are you doing?
I'm good. I had a chill weekend. I went out to PAX East, actually.
Oh.
On a whim, just for Sunday. I didn't go for the whole, like, four-day affair, but I went out there. I didn't take a picture, but I saw a big, giant Pikachu and a big, giant Eevee. People in Eevee, Pikachu, Eevee and Pikachu costumes. But, yeah, I wanted to, like, go into the Playlab area just because they have it at all these different conferences. But the line for TCG was, like, an hour long.
Really?
And I'm like, I have so many Pokemon cards at home. I don't need to do that.
Mom, I want some Pokemon cards. We have Pokemon cards at home.
Exactly. I was like, no, we don't need this. How about you,
we
Jake?
Don't need that. It's been real busy. For anyone who knows anything about sports, March Madness is going on right now. And let me just say that, like, Division I March Madness is much crazier than the other divisions that I've been a part of. So super busy because I've got other sports that are going on at the same time that are usually going on. So that's why we didn't have an episode last week, really. Schedule was way too busy. But today's a new day, Sean.
Yep.
It's a new morning, too.
Yes. Jake is... We're getting sleepy Jake today because it is early in Vegas for Jake.
Like 6 a.m.
Heck yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay.
But Jake, let's just jump into it. I'm sure people want to hear all about Temporal Forces decks. We did our set review, a very long one last time. Yeah. So I think now is the time, now that Vancouver is over. And I will say off the top, we won't be talking about Vancouver. Neither Jake or I watched it. And I'm sure the people who did well, congratulations. You're all amazing. But the format is just so done for me and Jake. So yeah, just shout out though that, you know, Vancouver did happen.
Congrats to Nathan Beck. Maridon ended up winning. Maridon, nice. Sean,
one last hurrah
for
Pat to the Peak.
What? Oh yeah, I
one
guess
last hurrah for Pat to the Peak judge.
Anyways, going on in the Pokemon trading card game, we first want to give a quick shout out to a review that one of you left over on Apple, an ISO 5-star review. This is going to be from Void Knight, left the other week. This show is the best when it comes to Pokemon cards, and the fan base says so too. That being said, can you do an episode about building an original deck and tips and tricks about having a good deck? Thanks a lot for your contributions. Void Knight. Thank you so much, Void Knight, for that. We'll have to look, especially as, you know, like, schedules get busy and Sean and I keep traveling and stuff like that. We may have to do an episode like that in the future. So that's something to keep definitely on the back burner. Appreciate your comment.
I will say I am known in some ways to build weird, unique, original decks. Like, don't get me wrong. I think that the hive mind that is the Pokemon community typically lands on the best decks. So a truly original deck is probably not going to be like a championship winning deck usually, but it is I do think there is like a bit of a skill to taking a card that really shouldn't be very good and then building something around it and making it, you know, decent. I think there's a Wigglytuff is a deck that I think is supposed to be a little bit better right now. And I built that deck 3 months ago before we got some of the better cards. So there definitely. And then I tried to make Fortress work and, you know.
Fortress is the best. Aerodactyl V-Star, best card in the game, for sure, based on our standards.
So, yeah. Jake. One quick note, we have two little pieces of news before we go over deck list, though. One quick note out there, this is for competitive players, and that is that League Cups and Challenges will not be happening in June. So this is a thing that Pokemon, they reached out to all their stores, and I actually heard from some of my local stores in the area that it's causing some scheduling challenges for larger cities. So, like, yeah, I mean, you know, you're really lucky if the stores in your area have a problem of not scheduling their events on the same days as each other, especially cups. But yeah, because this is only an 8-week window for stores to run the last cups of the season, it means that, you know, they'll need to be sort of stacked on top of each other a lot more. So, but I think it's interesting that they usually Pokemon allows them to run local events throughout a whole season. But it seems like this year they want to give themselves a month for the end of the season for all of those local scores to come in for world championship points. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Jake?
I think it's interesting because you talk about like NAIC always, and I guess continually will be the last CP event of the season before you go off into the world championships. And you see a lot of people like at this time do like one of two things, either at like after NAIC, and it, this may also just depend on your area of like where you live. Before this happens, it's like it's either you are taking a little break anyways for the month of June because you're just like, I've just been grinding Pokemon for so long, maybe NAIC was my final event, or people are complaining about how, you know, you can start getting points as soon as NAIC is over for the next season. So it's like you continuously have this grind. There's no break for something like the world's invites. So I kind of like this direction, especially because June is the month of summer, right? Especially for their smaller demographic. It allows like a more friendlier environment, I feel like. And we can touch up on some of the other things that they've that they're doing in June. That kind of bolster, I guess, this like thought of, you know, it's going to be more friendly and it's going to be more like beginner friendly, right? Like people joining the game, and it's not going to be ultra series competitive all the time in there. Yeah. So I mean, I personally like this direction.
Yeah. To Jake's point, what they're doing is they're encouraging stores to maybe try out alternate formats, and they specifically call out Gym Leader Challenge. So, you know, if you are interested in getting into that format, June is the perfect time to tell your store, like, hey, maybe we run an event or two in GLC. And they're giving out cool, like, Play Pokemon Reverse Holo foils. So, like, there's a Buddy Buddy Poffin, which is going to be a staple for a lot of Evolution decks. You have Super Rod, which is just such a good card. And then TM Evolution. Those are the three. And they have, like, the Play Pokemon logo stamp on them. Which I mean, maybe there have been some. I feel like we haven't seen these types of stamps very often recently. Like, I remember them way back. Like, there's some like old cards I have that have these stamps on them, but I don't remember a lot. We've gotten a lot of the prize pack stamp ones, which are different though.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't, if I'm thinking back and thinking, and maybe I just don't own any of them, I can't really think of any that have like this kind of hollow where the text is and stuff. There's like this faded background of the Play Pokemon logo, but I can remember like old school hollow patterns of Play Pokemon promos, but yeah, not exactly like this. So I like these. I mean, I think they're cool. I hope that they're a better quality than the other reverse hollows of recent years, like the main sets. Yeah. Because, man, we've talked about how much those suck.
Oh, man. Well, so, yeah, that was some Play Pokemon news. And then the other small piece of news is that after enough people have opened enough packs of the new set, apparently the pull rates for Temporal Forces, if your booster boxes have been absolute garbage, don't be surprised, because apparently... pull rates for the special illustration rares and hyper rares, like the chase cards, are harder for this set than any other previous Scarlet and Violet set. So what did it say? Like twice as rare for a special illustration rare as Paradox Rift, and 2.7 times rarer than earlier Scarlet Violet sets, which is a surprise.
A couple things before we get too deep into it. This is information from tcgplayer.com, the website that, you know, like sells cards kind of like an eBay style. You know, you list a card in a category and somebody eventually buys from you. Another thing to talk about is it's not necessarily all the pull rates, but it's specifically the top pull rates, quote unquote. I believe the only ones that are actually different, aside from the inclusion of A-spec cards, are the special illustration rare, which is usually like the art rare alternate or whatever, the SIR rarity. I don't know what's happened in Scarlet and Violet, but I've just had so much trouble remembering like SIR and IR, you know, transitioning into that, which it shouldn't be that hard. I'm just boomer at this point, I guess. And then the other rarity that has gone up as well, according to their statistics, is hyper rare, you know, the gold cards. So in terms of like illustration rare and ultra rares, you still have this kind of the same hit rates, but it talks about specific illustration rare and specific ultra rare actually have better hit rates than previous sets like Paradox Rift. So I'm wondering, and this just maybe because I don't know anything about statistics and whatnot, does that mean, and I haven't counted them up, that Temporal Forces has more illustration rares and ultra rares to be able to pull in comparison to something like previous sets like Paradox Rift or Obsidian Flames or anything like that?
I'm not sure. I didn't read the Temporal Forces set guide, so all I'm seeing on the article is that special illustration and hyper rares are harder to pull, but I don't know about the other ones. I don't know about the other rarity levels. There may be
according to the graphics they've posted, what I said is correct. Yeah.
Okay. Then I don't know. I mean, it may be that they have more just base level illustration rares. So yeah, it's just it occupies one of the reverse holo slots. And since we have two of them now, which we've had since Scarlet and Violet came out, yeah, it's just the odds of it just being in that spot or maybe a little higher.
But, and also with A-specs, right? Because you still have the double rares, don't you? The like EXs, the regular EXs.
Yep. Although one out of six is pretty common. Because I feel like even back in like tag team era days, you would get a GX as one out of six packs. So in a box of 36 packs, you would get six is what you could hope for. So, but I don't know. I think this is probably a good thing because I think we talked about like maybe a year ago or so that more Pokemon cards have been printed over the last like 2 years than like the previous 10 years combined or something. Like it just... there's been a huge increase in the printing of Pokemon cards. And I think it makes sense to make it harder to pull the chase cards because, you know, it's weird to think about the ultimate chase card, like, you know, Charizard, let's say. If you think about like, you know how in economics they have the Burger King index. So like how much, or the Big Mac index. How much a Big Mac costs relative to the currency exchange. I think the Charizard index is probably a thing where for each set, how much is that top level Charizard worth, you know, after a window of time? And like Paldean Fates Charizard, I think it's only like $100 or something like that.
I think it's less than that.
And I think about that compared to like, you know, the tag team era when that Charizard would have been like $300, right? And that's not to say that like, oh, we should go back to a time when the chase cards were worth more than three boxes combined. But if you are a collector, that drop in value probably is not like they want to balance that out. We need to go back to somewhere in between, right? Where it's not so valuable that people are going to start scalping, but not so cheap as to like dissuade people from collecting this era of cards.
the market value of the Obsidian Flames super or special there I go again messing up the messing up the wording for the rarity, the special illustration rare Charizard EX from Obsidian Flames, $44.55.
Like, that's so, like, the Obsidian Flames, what's the most expensive card in that set? One of the supporters, probably.
I'm gonna try to find it for you. Obsidian Flames
price highest to lowest.
Low. It's the Charizard. The
That's
Charizard,
wild.
$44.
$44 is the chase card in an entire set. I can't remember the last time it was that low. That's insane.
I'm curious as well on, like, the actual sets of, like, so, like, looking at Paldea Evolved right now, high to low, the number one card is the Iono. Remember that Iono? $74. So under $100 again. I think just noting that card is under 100 is a big deal in itself. Scarlet and Violet base set, according to TCG Player, by the way. According to TCG Player, high and low, guess what the most expensive card is, Sean, in Scarlet and Violet base set?
Scarlet and Violet base, would that be like, is Iono from Scarlet and Violet base?
No. That's Paradox Rift. The Miriam is what you're thinking of.
It's probably the Miriam then. And I would say the Miriam is between $35 and $50.
$23.91. Miriam, the special illustration rare Miriam. $24. You can get it. You can get your chase card, the number one card.
I will say
for
this.
$24.
Look, if you want to get into full art supporters, just start with Scarlet and Violet, because you could probably complete the whole era for, like, you know, 2 cups of coffee in like 6 months. So, like,
okay, maybe not that cheap, but still,
no,
really,
you get what I mean. It's crazy
compared to the $300 Bianca, you
right.
know, from Black and White.
So, I mean, look, I like that people can get nice looking cards at relatively inexpensive prices. But I do think that there'll be a win. Like, we'll look back at this era of cards and we'll probably be like, yeah, pull rates were a little too high and cards were probably overprinted. Like, this might be the 90s baseball era for Pokemon, where it's just like, yes, things probably aren't worth all that much comparatively. So this is a good correction, I would say, as a collector.
I would agree with that, and I wouldn't even, like, really ever complain about, you know, like, harder pull rates, I feel like. In my opinion, the hyper rares and the special illustration rares are always, like, these huge hits in my mind.
Yeah.
Right? So being able to make them a little bit more rare while also the highest, most expensive card in Temporal Forces right now is the special illustration rare Iron Crown EX. It's $88, already less than $100.
Yeah, and it's harder to pull already, and it's still less than $100. So
the highest gold card is 15.
Interesting. I wonder if they're adjusting the pull rates. I don't know. There's not really a real banger from this set. Like, I love the art on Iron Crown and Iron Leaves and, like, all of them. They're actually really good, but, like, they're not Pokemon that people really vibe with, like, long term. They're, like, they're cool, but they're very new. So I think until we get to a set that has, like, you know, the Charizards and the Blastoises and the Gengars and the Mewtwos and the Mews, once we get back to a set that has some of those bangers, I think that's when we'll see, like, has the adjustment paid off for Pokemon? So
this is the time to get into the set, in my opinion. Absolute peak. Love this set. Love this set. The art is great in there.
So, Jake, are you ready to talk about deck lists now?
I think I'm ready to talk about deck lists.
Okay.
Temporal Forces is here. More decks are on the horizon, and with rotation as well. There are plenty of new decks to play and try out while also reformatting some of your favorite archetypes in the game. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different deck lists. Whew. 9 different deck lists that we can talk about in this one, about some post-rotation goodness. So Sean, which one do you want to talk about first?
I mean, let's just start with Charizard. Like, this deck, it's not really wildly different, I would say. You know, because Charizard kind of kept a lot of what made it, you know, good or bad. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of changes that people are playing around with. These deck lists, by the way, are coming from, what tournament is this from, Jake?
This was the big tournament in Japan. Okay. I'm forgetting the name of the city that it was called, but this was a Japan run tournament, Champions League Fukuoka.
Okay. So this is from a Japanese tournament. So small grain of salt, Japanese players and decklist builders are often a little, have like some slight differences from Western players, but mm-hmm. still a good look of what you may expect to see at EUIC. So,
and especially if you want like a starting point, these are great starting points as well.
So this Charizard list, a couple of things that you might note, there are 2 Charmeleons in the list now, which I call out because Devolution TM was a bit of a challenge for this deck. At least I felt in the West, like decks that maybe can't hit those huge 330 numbers, but can either spread damage or hit, you know, smaller thresholds, would throw in a Devo TM to like late game, basically kill all of your opponent's threats. And then I would say another big change that we are seeing in terms of the overall deck list is the potential for Bibarel to be the draw engine over Pidgeot. So we'll see if that holds up in the West. I know a lot of players here really love Pidgeot, but I don't know if Rotom V, does that rotate?
I think it's F block.
Okay, so maybe it sticks around. So I think you can still play around with both versions, but those are the big differences. Obviously, Buddy Poffin is huge mm-hmm. for the deck as it replaces Battle VIP Pass and can be used outside of turn one. So weirdly, I think in some ways Charizard gets more consistent just slightly in that respect. But I think the reason for the Bibarel engine is if you think about Pidgeot being, okay, well, I can go grab any card out of my deck, but it's one card. There's a new future supporter card, Jake, that really combos well with Bibarel, and that mm-hmm. is Cypher Maniac's Code Breaking, which lets you look for any 2 cards in your deck and put them on top. And then, obviously, if you have Bibarel, hey, so long as you don't have a lot of cards in your hand, if you've got Squavit, too, you can Squavit, Bibarel. It's a really great combo to basically get 2 cards from your deck instead of 1, so long as the thing you want to get isn't a supporter.
The reincarnation of Mallow from Guardians Rising in the Sun and Moon block. A very, very good card in combination with Zorark GX with that trade ability. So we're seeing it once again with Cybermaniac's Code Breaking and Bibarel, as you mentioned, Sean. And I like this. I mean, I still think Pidgeot is good. Pidgeot EX is still a good card because, like, find any card you want, right? It's kind of insane. But with Nestash and Bibarel, the Squovit and Bibarel combo, like you mentioned, just really, really good overall, especially if you have like a clogged hand, right? You use Cypher Maniac's Code Breaking, Squovit for 4. Or I'm sorry, Squovit for 1, and then Bibarel for 4 more to look at the top 5, basically, instead of maybe just 1 or 2 just the Code Breaking and Bibarel. So it's a really, really cool archetype, in my opinion. 3 rare candies, in my opinion, is kind of scary, but you don't need to run 4 exactly anymore because of the deficit of Pidgeot in this deck list, and with the promotion of more Charmeleons, right, that means less rare candies, because you don't need to, you know, rare candy 2 Charizards in 1 turn usually, because you're just evolving and attacking, right?
Yeah,
so I like this idea.
I think the only thing that scares me about this list, and like I think it's worth playing around with for players, there's two things actually. One, this list opts for Prime Catcher as the ace spec, which is very good, right? Like you can use Cypher Maniac's Code Breaking, put Prime Catcher on top, draw it, and still get a gust effect in the same turn.
You can also Arvin it.
Right, exactly. So like, don't get me wrong, I like it. I think that Maximum Belt is another card, though, that a lot of Charizard players are playing around with as another option to just say, okay, well, I could either boss something up, or the problem Charizard has, especially in the early and mid game, is things are going to be just out of reach in terms of damage output. So Maximum Belt adding 50 damage to your attack, you know, maybe makes up the difference, right? If you start the game and say you want to take a knockout on, I don't know, an Iron Hands or, you know, a 220 HP Pokemon. Well, with Charizard, now you can do that with the Maximum Belt, where you couldn't before. But the other thing that scares me about this deck, Jake, is there's only four real attackers in the deck. You've got three Charizard EXs, one Radiant Charizard. And I just, there is a world where you prize two Charizard EXs. And
I think you just take the L at that point.
I mean, but like, I don't know. That seems to me like it's prizing two Charizard EXs is unlucky, but it's not so unlikely that it will never happen, right? Like, people prize two of their top end frequently in well, games.
I think about this part too is like, if you prize two Charizards, okay, you have one Charizard EX attacker that you can use that is pretty searchable. Through all things considered, with Ultra Ball first off, and also Cyber Maniac's Code Breaking, right? You also have the Radiant Charizard, a card which, if you go ahead and just use your Charizard EX and power up a ton, you could take a knockout with 250 damage to start taking some prizes to give you more opportunities to get into your other Charizard EXs from the prizes. So I don't necessarily worry about it too much, I feel like, personally. It sucks, and it's definitely a, it's not a good thing, that's for sure. Like, you don't just be like, oh, okay, two prized, okay, moving on. You have to kind of play around it, and you have to maneuver around it is the word that I was looking for. So, but it's not like, if it's really that bad, just scoop and go to next, because statistically, it's pretty unlikely that that's going to happen.
I guess.
I don't know the exact number, but I've seen the numbers before.
Yeah. You've got two super rods as well, so maybe that's how this version of the deck makes up for it. But
yeah,
net, I think Charizard will continue to be a menace in the format. And whichever version you choose to make, I think this is definitely the Cypher Maniac's Codebreaker definitely makes a Bibarel build much more interesting, I think. Jake, what is the next deck that you want to talk about?
We'll talk about Future Box, one of the new decks with Temporal Forces that people are very, very excited about. And considering that a lot of the Temporal Forces cards are super cheap, this might be pretty cheap as well if you already have your Iron Hands. I think Iron Hands is actually a decently expensive card.
Yep.
So this deck in here plays four Iron Hand EXs, three Iron Crown EXs, and two of those pre-release Maridons we were talking about the other week that are very, very good. So the idea of this, we kind of mentioned it the other day with the Heavy Batons, right? The Heavy Baton, if your Iron Hands is knocked out by damage from an attack, move up to three basic energies from your bench Pokemon and or from that Pokemon to your bench Pokemon in any way you'd like. So with the Iron Crown boosting up damage for your future Pokemon, 20 per Cobalt Command, your Iron Hands is going to be boosting up and bulking up damage with either Amp You Very Much or even Arm Press, right?
Yeah.
Could use that attack. So really linear deck list, really cool. Deck list very simple as well, you know, using the booster energy capsules to retreat your Maridons and your Iron Crowns. You've got Techno Radars as well to search for those future Pokemon. Your Pokemon search in here, Nest Balls, you got a couple of those. The Techno Radars, you got a couple of those. As well as energy acceleration through like the Reboot Pod, the Electric Generator. Just some really, really interesting options. And also 13 energies in this deck, plus 3 gift energies. So 16 energies overall in this deck.
Yeah, I mean, Jake, what are your takes? Like, I've seen a few builds of of this. I'm planning to build one myself. This is a Japanese list, so they typically, a lot of their tournaments are best of one. So
they're all best of one.
Yeah, they might be prioritizing like having like building a deck that you need to get lucky. But if you get lucky often enough, the deck will just work better than another deck.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think though? And maybe like a best of three format, like EUIC, like for this build.
I think that it's kind of tough for Iron Hands and Iron Crown because I feel like this deck really heavily relies. Well, maybe not heavily relies. I mean, you're committing 4 cards basically for the heavy baton combo, but with Lost Vacuum still being a prevalent card, I think it's really, I think it's an interesting deck. I don't think it's going to be like super good, but as you're mentioning, you know, with, you know, being able to run hot and stuff like that. I mean, we could just see one Iron Hands, Iron Crown Future Box deck really just high roll in EUIC, you know, hit the good matchups, right? Hit their electric generators, but also, you know, through peak acceleration, the small Maridon's attacks, right? And also like combination of Reboot Pod, maybe it's not as high rolly as we think, you know, per se, because it does have several energy acceleration opportunities in at its disposal, and with gift energy, you know, you draw cards, you know. Yeah. We don't have any like kind of, we don't have like a Faba type removal like we do with Lost Vacuum. So
no, that's
it's a cool deck. I think it's neat.
Yeah, I do like the gift energy in here because to your point, like drawing cards, you just don't have any draw in the form of your support Pokemon really. So
mm-hmm.
The one thing I'll say about the deck, which I've seen people play online, I think Maridon is the Pokemon you want to start with every game. And I don't know. I feel like you want to go second with this deck to use peak acceleration, right?
Mm-hmm. You can even like turn one arm press or amp you very much, honestly.
You could if you hit your generators.
Yeah.
And get your future booster energy capsule to retreat. But hey, look, it's possible, right? You really have to hit a lot to get there. But I do think, though, that like most times, especially in a best of three, you're most likely going to be wanting to start your Maridon. And you can either take a single prize knockout, like a cheeky little one, because that peak acceleration does 40. If you get 2 or 3 Iron Crowns down, all of a sudden you're doing 80, 100 damage. Mm-hmm. If you throw a future booster, you're doing 120. So that, you know, if you go second, that's going to knock out most non-EX Pokemon that your player, that, you know, that opponent's going to put down. So, and you get to accelerate energy. So the ratios right now are a little too turbo for Iron Hand specific, being your main attacker, even turn one. Whereas I think a split of like 3 Maridon, 3 Iron Hands, I don't know. For me personally, I think that's a much, much safer like thing of like, you probably want to start Maridon. And the other thing that although I love gift energy, not having any psychic energy in the deck, it just makes your Maridon and your Iron Crown, they have other attacks, which are really good, right? Like, mm-hmm. there are situations where you might want to throw the Maridon in the active and do 160 plus, you know, 60 if you have 3 Iron Crown out, or 80, and you could do 220, 240 damage with Maridon. And so a single prizer, being able to take 2 prizes and force your opponent to have a boss or a prime catcher, that's, I don't know. I see, like, that's a huge upside. And so not including the psychic, in my opinion, is a little sus. But look, this deck is, I think, built for a best of one and a speed version. But
I find it a little tough to, like, the idea of including the psychic energies, because, like, you have, like, what, like, you need to draw into your psychic energies, right? Or at least, well, you have to draw at least one, and then you can heavy baton it, reboot pot it, you know, in specific places. So I wonder if it's almost just, like, not worth it, right?
You could peak acceleration a psychic into play.
Well, I guess, but honestly, like, I feel like peak acceleration on your active Maridon is just a waste of energies, because 110 this format on your opponent's second turn, I feel like is too easy.
Well, you could peak acceleration a psychic onto Iron Hands, because Iron Hands is
attacks. I guess you could.
Yeah, and then you just heavy baton the psychic if you want later, because either you can heavy baton it back onto Maridon later, or you can heavy baton it onto Iron Crown, which will do 50 damage to two of your opponent's Pokemon. So if you need to do cleanup, or I don't know, I just, for me personally, I think this deck can suffer from some of the same challenges that, like, you think about Maridon before Path to the Peak Judge was, like, the thing for Maridon. And it was extraordinarily linear. And, like, if your opponent just had the answers, and because they knew what you were going to do every turn. Like, this deck, the only game plan for this deck is Iron Hands attacks every turn, basically. The only difference is sometimes Maridon does peak acceleration. But, like, if your opponent just, you know, this doesn't have any gusting either, which is, it's got four counter catchers. I will take that back. But, but, like, the four counter catchers is also, Jake, to be frank, weird. You're playing a turbo build that wants to take extra prizes with Maridon, with Iron Hands. If you're not ahead on prizes, what's happening? What happened?
Well, you think about Iron Hands' prize mapping, right? If you knock out EX, that's three prizes. You knock out a little baby Charmander, for instance, that's two prizes. In exchange for your Iron Hands, that may be two prizes, or your Maridon, that's one prize. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, you could be behind. It's like the idea of the Zora box with Slowbro, right? To where, like, okay, you can lead for a majority of the game, but at the very end of the game, I'm going to take the lead, right? Yeah. And take the win. Which, by the way, we saw Zoroark do really, really well in Vancouver, I saw. So, shout outs to you.
Hey.
I can't remember their name. They're one of the Seattle tabletop people. Nice. Anyway, shout out to you. Crew. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. But I don't know. I think with this deck, I think drawing cards is more valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think that some version of this deck is going to be a real problem, though. Like, and you know, whether or not you include the psychic or change up some of the, or even honestly, like, put in a prime catcher over the reboot pod, because maybe your energy acceleration plus baton is enough to keep your energy on track the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think some version of this is going to be a problem, which I think makes, weirdly, I think it makes cards like Iron Bundle even better if you can find a way to actually attack with Iron Bundle. I think Iron Bundle says, is it that your opponent can't attack with basic or can't attack with evolution? Maybe it's evolution. I can't remember.
I can't remember because I haven't seen too much of it. I've heard people talk about Iron Bundle, but I have yet to see it really in execution. If the defending Pokemon is an evolution Pokemon, it can't attack during your opponent's next turn.
Never mind that. But point being, there are cards that stop basic Pokemon from attacking.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, you know, Noivern is a good example. And, like, I'll be interested in to see how EUIC shakes up. I don't think that the counter decks are going to necessarily be that strong in EUIC because the format is just completely new. So I expect some version of this to do pretty well. But
with Future Box, we've also got Ancient Box going on. The return of Bee's Revenge with the Roaring Moon here. Two attacks, one or two attacks, 70 plus, 10 more for each ancient Pokemon in the discard pile. You're running ancient Pokemon like Coridon, like Fluttermane, and one Great Tusk. So this deck is interesting. I remember like watching Azul peeping into a stream, and he was testing out this deck like on release day, and he kept joking around about how Roaring Moon, the Vengeful Fletching, is super underwhelming, and especially early game, it's just really, really tough. Like not having any Pokemon in the beginning in your discard pile. So using Coridon in the beginning, right? 30 damage for each of your ancient Pokemon in play, to be able to at least spruce up a little bit more damage. I don't know. This definitely not as big of a believer in this deck as I am in Future Box.
I think this deck is a weird combination in my brain of like, look, it's a single prize deck that does hit decent numbers. Like, let's not get it twisted. If you can do Coridon, let's say your Radiant Greninja is usually out. So Coridon is going to do 150 max. And then Roaring Moon is a late game sweeper for two energy. And that card is going to come in and do, I don't know, anywhere between 150 to 200, let's say, depending on how many ancient cards are in your discard, which is like you have Sada and Explorer's Guidance and Earthen Vessels as well, plus ancient, but like you can get pretty decent, but like odds are it's not going to be one-shotting giant things. So the problem I find with this deck though is Coridon is dragon type. So you don't have, it's not like a very good, it's not a very good card to like hit against for weakness. And I compare this deck in some ways to like Reggie, the Reggie box deck, which Reggie's was also kind of a multi-Pokemon. You needed a specific kind of board or deck setup. But with Reggie's, at least, you had typings that you could choose who your attacker was that could do double damage to your opponent. And that was the real threat in a lot of ways with Reggie, right? Either you had one Pokemon that just did a crap load of damage, or you had like Regieleki or the Steel Registeel or whatever that was like meta relevant. But here you've got Roaring Moon is darkness, but like that's only really good right now against Gardevoir, which is not nothing, but like, okay.
You're falling off.
Right. And then the only other Pokemon that you're actually going to attack with that has a typing that can be weak relevant is Great Tusk. But its second attack requires four energy, so you're never doing that, probably.
Pretty tough to do that. It's more for the control matchup, I think.
Right. So you're just sort of, I don't know, for me, like I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like, yeah, you do good damage, and maybe you can squeeze in funky wins here and there. But like the second you sit down against an Iron Hands deck, what are you doing? That thing is gonna take two prizes every turn. And you're like,
I would love to see the matchup against Lost Box, right? Because I feel like you can have a pretty good advantage against Lost Box, because Lost Box Sableye only does 12 damage counters, where your two damaging Pokemon are 140 HP. So I would love to see that kind of matchup to see how it plays out, and especially with the addition of ancient Pokemon Fluttermane, right? As long as this Pokemon is in the active spot, your opponent's active Pokemon has no abilities except for Midnight Fluttering, and you just maybe you Hex Hurl, I don't know, maybe you do, maybe you don't, to just take knockouts left and right. But maybe that's why this deck is somewhat relevant, is because it just beats down decks like that.
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely, I think if you start your Fluttermane and their comfies can't do anything, and obviously Escape Rope is gone, so it's hard to get out of the active now, to get it out of the active without a gusting effect. So, it could be good in that matchup. I don't know. For me, it's just one of those, like, I am not entirely sure for the rest of the decks you're more likely to face. Like, maybe this deck if you're playing, if Charizard is really good or some of the other decks, maybe Devolution TM is a card that eventually needs to make its way into this deck so that you can have one turn of just kind of like, you know, taking out a bunch of things at once, taking out all the threats. But, but yeah. Next deck, Jake, is Lugia Archaeops. Now, this is a deck that... Oh, yeah. This is a deck we actually talked about a few weeks ago. But just to recap, people, the thing that makes this... that makes Lugia good again is the new Cinccino. So, for those of you who don't know, Cinccino has a second attack that does 70 damage for each special energy card attached to this Pokemon. So it does not count the number of energy, it just counts the number of cards. So your double turbos are not going to do bonus damage, but 70 is a huge number. So you, if you have two Archaeops out, you can instantly attach four special energy cards from your deck to Cinccino, attaching one from hand, and you're doing 350 damage from a Pokemon that had no energy on it when you started the turn. And it's a single prizer that's doing all of that work, right? So I think that is what makes this deck so strong going into the next format. But Jake, I want to know, how are you feeling?
I really like Lugia. I think Lugia is honestly a great choice with its options at its disposal, right? The variety that it can bring. And now with the Cinccino for that hard-hitting punch, right? And all of the different energies that are in format. You know, you have so many different energy types, six different ones, at least in this archetype of Lugia. You know, you got a couple one-ups with the Therapeutic and the V-Guard, but like having four different, pretty much, four ofs in the deck, you could argue that Mist Energy should be a four of instead of like maybe V-Guard or Therapeutic or something. But having all of those different energy types along with the double turbos, right, which give two energies, really gives so many different options with this deck. You know, Serena being in here, the first time we've seen Serena in how long? I don't remember the last time we were seeing Serena.
I mean, I guess the versatility to choose to draw cards instead of, you know, Gust is that maybe just what the doctor ordered for this deck.
Going back to Great Balls as well to find various Pokemon in the deck along with a Master Ball to find whatever you want. Just really boosts up the consistency of this deck to continuously summoning star for Archaeops and stuff. And especially with no path to the peak, right? Not too many, you know, ability stopping Pokemon. And so, I mean, Fluttermane, the one that we just talked about, you may think, oh, that one. But Fluttermane only works on the active. Right? So if you have the Cinccino doing Call for Family to get out a Lugia V or maybe to get out, you know, Snorlax or another Mincino or something like that, your Lugia V star is still going to be able to summoning star. So that consistency, you don't have to worry too much about the stadium and just consistently finding, you know, different things. You have the Lumineon Jock combo in this deck. Have we ever seen Jock in a deck?
Like a real deck? I mean, not often. I like Jacques, but it has to be in very specific decks. Like, I liked Jacques in Wigglytuff and in Fortress because they're all stage ones. And so, like, in that... But, I mean, Jacques in this deck, you think about, you lost Professor Burnett, I believe.
Yes.
The one that puts cards directly into the discard. So, Jacques now, because it goes into your hand, you can Jacques... for two Archaeops, maybe. Ultra Ball both of those Archaeops, get Lugia. It's like a Professor Burnett at home. So
yeah.
There's also
different opportunities, like you mentioned, with Jock to be able to do stuff like Read the Wind, right? On an early turn to be able to get rid of the card and just kind of advance your board a little bit more. So I don't know. I mean, I really like Lugia. I think it's going to be really strong again in this format simply because of the Mincino, right? You don't have to depend on Lugia to hit those huge numbers. And it's it, hopefully you kept your Lugia V stars or you bought them during the quote unquote Lugia break.
Yeah. I think the only thing this deck is going to really have to contend with is the matchup with Future Box, the Iron mm-hmm. Hands version. Just because, yeah, Lugia is weak to electric type. and
you have to put one in play.
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing you could do. Now, you only ever need one. And I think that, mm-hmm. but the problem is that Lugia, you're sitting here like, and maybe the prize trade math doesn't matter. I'm trying to think it through, but like, okay, one Lugia, let's assume you got to give up three prizes to the Iron Hands. You take two in response with Chinchino. You give up two prizes with your Chinchino. You take two in response. Yeah, it's if your opponent takes the first prize there, it's not looking good. And I think in that matchup, you just try never to play your Lumineon, I guess, is the main thing mm-hmm. with that matchup. But
I think the biggest thing that we think about is how many Iron Hands Future Box decks are playing something other than Counter Catcher to be able to gust up, right? The ace spec of choice that we saw was not the Prime Catcher. So long as you don't, you know, trash the Lugia or put the Lugia V-Star in the active first when you summoning star, the more likely you are to keep it safe. And especially with Collapse Stadium, right? We've seen Collapse Stadium in the past. You can get rid of that Lugia V-Star because, right, Lugia V-Star just uses summoning star. And then, you know, unless you want to attack with it, it's done. The ability can only be used once, right? And at that point, you're focusing on the primal turbos and whatnot of your deck. So maybe your Iron Hands Future Box matchup isn't so bad with that idea, but you do have to find your two of Collapse Stadium, at least in this list.
Yeah, so I fully agree, though. I think that's a good point, is if you can play it such that you Collapse Stadium away your only Lugia before they get a chance to knock it out, and then you go completely single prizer route, you know, so long as you play your turns out and your opponent maybe can't gust up Archaeops, you might be able to take a win there if you're the first one taking prizes. So, yeah, I do like that. That's interesting.
It's an interesting idea for a matchup.
The other deck, just going through some of these decks now, this is going to be, I think, a little quicker because I think some of these decks we've seen and they're just how they're different. Mm-hmm. So the next one is Lost Box. Obviously, Lost Box is losing Dragonite, Kyogre, Escape Rope, kind
poor
of a
Kyogre.
I know. So the question becomes, well, what does Lost Box look like after all that is said and done? And the answer, I think, is partially, it kind of looks like whatever Tord was running at the end of the format. So like, you know, you got your normal Lost Box combos of Sableye, Comfy, Cram, but you're also running the Roaring Moon and the Iron Hands, Raikou. And it looks like here, in place of all of those escape ropes, Jake, the cards that you're throwing in are Prime Catcher and two of the new Rescue Board. Jake,
Rescue Board, I think, is a no-brainer kind of with Comfy because of the retreat abilities that you get. Because, I mean, no matter what, your Comfy is going to have free retreat.
Yep. Jake, and also I'll just mention Buddy Buddy Poffin is great for finding your Comfies. A little sad that they can't find Sableye, but, you know, Comfy is really the main thing you want to get down as soon as possible. So you basically
you're not gonna want Sableye at the beginning of the game anyways, especially as a one of. So I think you just take the odds of trying to find it in other means such as Nest Ball and Culverse Experiment and stuff. Maybe the Roxanne, the Artisan even you have in this deck, four Seal Stone. Although four Seal Stoning for a Pokemon, just one like Sableye so feels kind of weird.
Yeah. But in general, I think Roaring Moon, Iron Hands being like a couple of interesting options to like take you some extra prizes out of nowhere, does feel good. But Jake, do you think Lost Box is still going to have that oomph that it had pre-rotation?
I don't think it's going to be It's kind of weird. So I think as a deck overall, it loses some value, but I still think it's a strong deck. But also, I think a lot of the people that will choose to play Lost Box are the people that have played Lost Box for a long time, right? Because this is, we've seen the Lost Zone engine for a while now, and especially as the deck evolves, there are still a lot of cards that are the same and a lot of choices off of Chorus Experiment, off of Comfey, right, that you're going to have to decide between. Not saying that the deck is linear, but there's a lot of familiarity with this archetype overall because it is generally the same. So I think that's something also important to note. I think a lot of your success in Lost Box is going to be found through the people that we've seen playing it for a long time. Yeah. But overall as a deck, like, you're not going to see probably a majority of the meta ever again be like a Lost Box deck.
The one thing I'll point out, which I did notice, is a lot of the decks that we've been talking about recently and that I've sort of looked at, people are opting not to play Manaphy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it may change when EYC rolls around, but I think that opens up a huge window for Lost Box because it's one of the few decks right now that can really take advantage of Greninja. And yeah, like, between that and Iron Hands and Sableye, like, if you're not playing it and say you're, you know, trying to sneak your way into like, oh, I don't need Manaphy, I won't see a lot of it. It could be one of those things where EUIC, this deck is already established and it may do actually really well with, like you said, one or two players who know the deck really well, and it makes top eight just because it's consistent and the meta was just not thinking about it. So,
mm-hmm.
Next one on the list is another Lost deck, but this time we're going back to Lost Tina. This is not Lost Tina. This is just Giratina.
There's two different options. Yeah. There is Lost Box Giratina V-Star and then Arceus Giratina V-Star. In the notes that I was talking about, this had a couple, I think, placings in the top 16 of the Fukuoka tournament. So I opted to put Arctina down in here, but really a lot of the only change that we see in the Arctina deck, it's very similar in a lot of areas. The differences are kind of what you mentioned with the Charizard and the maximum belt, right? Like, 180 damage is kind of weird, so you include maximum belt to be able to do potentially 230 damage, knocking out any sort of V on the opposing side of the field.
Or most EXs?
Oh, yeah, like basic Pokemon EXs.
Yeah, the only ones that you're not knocking out at 230 are things like Raging Bolt or Iron Boulder, but like, mm-hmm. Iron Hands is 230. You know, like,
your maximum belt also getting you to 330 damage on a Giratina Lost Impact to knock out a Charizard.
Yeah, and then you've got, what's that? What's that green Pokemon I see over there, Jay?
Speaking of Charizard, you also have the inclusion of Iron Leaves EX. Like we talked about, it's just the Charizard hit. I mean, you see a dark type Pokemon that's weak to grass, or any type of Pokemon that's weak to grass, you throw in the Iron Leaves, move it into the active, use its ability to move all the other energy from your Pokemon to the Iron Leaves, and you take a KO because you're already playing grass energies anyways.
Yeah.
With the Giratina V-Star and with Arceus V-Star, it's pretty easy to include or keep in a deck. And then also some other inclusions like the Airy, right? Discarding some item cards that you may see in there, as well as the Technical Machine Devolution, right?
Yep.
Going to be really interesting to see this deck in action once again, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that this deck, obviously, it's quite different. You're not playing your Path to the Peak engine anymore. So I don't know if the Arceus version versus the Lost Box version, I have no opinion as to which is probably better. I tend to lean towards like super competitive play, like, if a deck can have more single prize attackers, usually you're in a better position. But, you know, who knows? Maybe with Iron Hands, if the Future Box deck is very popular, having things that are a little beefier that can't get one hit, you know, knocked out by Iron Hands for two prizes, it might actually be that it's a counterintuitive format right now where you want something that they're going to need to grind through your Pokemon. And with Radiant Gardevoir on your, you know, protecting your two Vs by 20 damage each, you know, 300 damage is annoying. It's just annoying to get through. So, you know, it'll be interesting.
I like the deck. I think it's a neat reintroduction in the format.
Jake, this next deck I know is it a pet of yours? Is this a deck you're gonna play? This is
It's probably the cheapest deck that you can buy.
Yeah, that or Ancient Box, one of the two for sure.
Mm-hmm.
This is Great Tusk, which is the mill deck. We've talked about this deck before from the perspective of, like, you know, in a best of one format, especially when you can't, maybe you don't know what your opponent is playing right off the bat, or you can't make an adjustment between games, that, like, milling your opponent three cards every single turn?
It's, being able to discard three cards every single turn.
So if you combo that with, you know, the supporter Airy and, you know, I don't know, just make it with the Hero's Cape or Ancient Booster Capsule, something where maybe your opponent can't knock you out, that you catch your opponent off guard in a best of one environment, I think. But, you know, I'll give my opinion. I think best of three, there's not enough disruption in this deck. But Jake, want to know your thoughts.
I think adding more disruption in the deck causes this deck to be less powerful, right? Because in order to use Land Collapse and discard three cards, it's four cards actually, because you discard a card, and then if you use an Ancient Supporter, you discard three more cards. So it's technically four cards every turn, but fact of the matter is, to be able to discard four cards, right, you have to play Asada's Vitality and Explorer's Guidance, right, the two Ancient Supporters that we see in this format. And so trying to be able to use something like Airy, I think Airy could be good in more of a late game setting where you maybe they have a huge hand, right, just from late play, and so you're going kind of for the finishing move of like Countercatcher and then Airy to trap something overall. True. And being able to get rid of some of those item cards, those switches and stuff that they're hiding in their hands. So like you mentioned, you know, the Ancient Energy Capsule, the Hero's Cape, being able to stall a little bit, the Bravery Charms to make you hit those super odd numbers. And with Rescue Board and Radiant Greninja even, you're going to be able to at least draw a little bit of cards in your deck to help set up and help get going. So I like this deck. I think it's cool. I think it's definitely tough. It maximizes more on people not knowing or not expecting the matchup overall. But I would be aware of this deck. I don't know if I would be overly threatened by the deck. Like, if you're going to take a loss to a deck, because we're talking about a lot of decks here, you can't beat them all. You might be all right losing to Great Tusk.
Yeah, I think the cards that I would consider adding, because I think you're right, you do need to play your Ancient Supporters every turn for the most part. So maybe I would look at things like Grabber or Hand Trimmer to add alternate disruption options, especially in like a best of three, where once your opponent gets wise to what you're doing, in the next game, they can maybe adjust their play. So if it's hard for them to plan because of those other cards, I think that also maybe helps. But play around with it.
Hand Trimmer, I don't know if I agree with Hand Trimmer, because your opponent chooses what they discard. So it's like, yeah, you put them down to five cards in hand, but you know, you just got rid of all those dead cards, right?
Maybe.
They're still going to keep their switches and stuff. You have to combo that specifically with Airy.
With Airy. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just thoughts, whether it's grab or hand. Who knows?
Play Great Tusk.
Yeah.
Have fun.
We have two more decks real quick. One of them, is Gardevoir. I think we've talked about this before. Oh, this is an old list, Jake, so we can skip it. This one has Level Ball and Fog Crystal still.
Oh, maybe I mislooked in there. It's fine. But all well, right.
What I'll say is Gardevoir in general is a good deck, and people expect it to do pretty well, but I personally worry about, you've lost the Mirage Step Curlia, you've lost your Fog Crystals. Like, I think it, as an established deck, it lost a lot of its setup, and I think it might take it a tournament or two to really find its way again.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick read from me. But last one here, Jake, is Dialga. What do you think Dialga, what do you do? Give me your thoughts, Jake, because I know that you do like Dialga V-Star.
So Dialga V-Star, it is definitely a deck. That's a great way to call it. With the Metangs to be able to accelerate energy and to hit for big damage numbers, as well as Star Kronos, the V-Star power that lets you take another turn, basically, for 5 energy, which, honestly, with the Metangs, it's not too hard to hit, I feel like, as someone who played it with the Magnezone. Star Kronos is not the hardest thing to hit ever. So the idea of this deck is just accelerate energies on your Origin Form Dialga V-Star, knock out really anything in the format, and play a couple other attackers that you may have in the list as well, like the Zamazenta, right? We've seen that Zamazenta previously in Lost Box decks, with that retaliate attack to be able to take return KOs for big damage. Oh, you have a lot of energies that have hit the discard because you have an Origin Form Dialga V-Star in there. You've got your Zamazenta that got attacked earlier, or maybe just through, you know, research and different things like that, Ultra Balls, you had to discard energies overall. Well, cue in the Hisuian Basculegion Legion that does 20 more damage for each basic energy in your discard pile, and then shuffle those back into the deck, as well as Hisuian Basculin, which has gathered the crew to be able to help you set up those Pokemon like the Beldums and your Origin Form Dialga, so to make it as consistent as possible. I think this deck just won recently Thailand, the Thailand quote-unquote regionals or big tournament over there. So don't sleep on the Dialga. Might also be one of the cheaper decks that you can buy to be able to play. And I know if I'm going to be playing, I'm going to be trying this one. Because I think I still have my Dialgas.
I will also say that there are other cards that you can experiment with this one. Specifically the new Stadium. That makes it so that your metal type Pokemon take 20 less damage, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much that matters in the format, but I think just the thing to consider with this deck is you can do a decent amount of damage and take an extra turn. That is something that, like, I don't know. Like, you saw how good Medicham was, you know, when it was really, like, at the peak of its everything. So... Mm-hmm. Extra turns are no joke, and if you can hit the right matchups and get the right sort of thing going, it can be hard to beat getting that far ahead of your opponents.
It's definitely a funny deck. It's definitely, I mean, I like this deck. Do I think it's going to be one of the best decks in format? No, but I think now is maybe the time that we'll see it, like, top 8 a like US, or, you know, just a regular play Pokemon like regional, or maybe even EUIC. I would love to see this in EUIC. Yeah.
Jake, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today. Any last thoughts before we head out into the sunset?
It's a new format. Try to come into it with a fresh mind. Try different things, right? Try different decks. Pokemon's pretty accessible right now, and especially because we talked about earlier Temporal Forces being cheaper. I feel like a lot of these new cards and new decks you can try out and get into. So just have fun with it.
Love it. All right, sign us off, Jake.
Thank you so much for listening to the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. I'm Jake, that's Sean. We'll see you next episode with another fun time.